It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are coming to sort of the end of the firsts. So I had this conversation with Dallas Hudson yesterday about the last, like he had his first blazing star blooms yesterday, and that was 2 days later than average. But among the other flowers that we are going to be seeing, I had my first flat-topped asters. This is the season when the asters and the goldenrods begin to predominate. And in both cases, there are lots of them. And they are subtly different. Only a botanist could appreciate some of the subtle differences. Another flower in this same group is sunflowers. And you go out and you look at the sunflower and you say, oh, it's a sunflower, or oh, it's an aster, or oh, it's a goldenrod. And that should be enough. But for some of us, the desire runs stronger. And we try to figure out which sunflower or which aster or which goldenrod. And it gets down to counting petals. It gets down to looking at the little bracts, which are sometimes called phalaries, I think, phalaries, the little green things that are underneath the flower, oftentimes the shape and number and hairiness or lack of hairiness are important in determining who's who. But some are obvious. And among the obvious ones is the flat-topped aster, which is blooming right now, and it is on time. It is right. Well, I saw my first one on Saturday, and the average first appearance of the flat-topped aster is the 28th, which was yesterday. So very close to being right on time. Flat-topped aster, white flower, flat top. Think of this. You're going to see a disc of flowers that'll be a foot across or 9 inches across. Think like the size of a pie. And lots and lots and lots of white flowers all at the same level. All nice and even right at the top, flat top. There's a goldenrod that is budded up, not quite yet blooming, that is sometimes called flat-topped goldenrod for the same reason. The flowers reach a certain height and they all sort of bloom at the same height. The flat-topped goldenrod is much shorter. The flat-topped aster can be 5 feet tall or more. Flat-topped goldenrod seldom more than 3 feet. The flat-topped goldenrod also has a very, very narrow leaf. And the scientific species name is graminifolia, which is grass-leaved grass-leaved, because the leaf is exceedingly narrow. It's going to be 10 times longer than wide. It might be a quarter of an inch wide and easily, 4 inches long. So, but look at the flower. In the case of the goldenrod, it's going to be yellow, and it's going to be, the flower head will be not nearly as big as the flat-topped aster, probably 3 or 4 inches across, but same feature. All of the flowers are going to be relatively even across the top of that plant. So look for the flat-topped aster to be blooming. Flat-topped aster has begun to bloom. The flat-topped goldenrod is right on the cusp of blooming. In fact, probably by next week, I will be talking to you about the bloom on the flat-topped goldenrod. The other aster that's blooming by my house is the shining aster, which is a close relative of one that I used to identify as the purple-stemmed aster. The difference, and this gets into the details, but the difference is hairs along the midvein of the leaf. So it's not enough to just look at the flower and look at the stem. You have to pull a leaf off or grab hold of a leaf and hold it up to the sun and look and see if there are fine hairs along the midvein. And if there are, and if there are hairs along the stem in rows, it's purple stemmed aster. If it doesn't have those hairs, it's shining aster. And those are basically the differences. Challenging, entertaining, something I like to do. Not everyone does. You know, sometimes it's enough to look at it and say, that's a pretty blue aster. And oftentimes that will do. And so if you're looking at the little blue asters out there right now, chances are they are shining or purple stemmed asters. But the flat-topped aster is blooming as well. White flowers on the flat-topped aster, blue flowers on the shining aster. That's kind of the aster and goldenrod. That's as much about those as I want to say for today. But among the other flowers that I'm checking out, there's a second fleabane. So we've had the common fleabane, Philadelphicus, I think. The fleabane is like a, think of a tiny daisy. White flower with a yellow center. Sometimes the flowers can be pink with a yellow center. 50 or more rays. The rays around the flower in the center are very, very thin, almost like hairs. And that's fleabane. And the second, the fleabane that is blooming right now is called annual fleabane. And it has a leaf, not very big, maybe 2 inches long. Sometimes can get out, I suppose, to maybe 4 inches long. Depends on, of course, the plant and how, you know, the availability of nutrients. But the leaf is toothed along the edge. The Philadelphia fleabane or the common fleabane, the leaf has maybe one tooth along the edge on either side. But this one has several teeth along the edges of the leaf on both sides. And it's, other than that, the fleabane flowers are pretty similar. Lots and lots and lots of tiny rays around a little yellow center. Joe pieweed has begun to bloom. Joe pieweed is a plant of the water, it's always growing near water. You will find it along ditches where there's water. You'll find it along streams or along lake shores. It can be 3 or 4 feet tall. It's got a deeply purple stem. The leaves grow in whorls. That is, they come out, there'll be 4 or 5 leaves that come out of the stem right together in one spot. There'll be just this whorl of leaves. And that is, the flower is going to be pink. And before it blooms, it's this pink little knob. Once it blooms, it's this kind of hairy looking flower, not anything organized, quite disorganized, sort of unkempt. If you've ever seen me, think of the hair on my head, only think pink. I should maybe dye my hair pink. What do you think?
Sure.
I could look like Courtney Williams.
Natisha.
Yeah.
I've got some.
Uh-oh. Oh, wonderful. We are in our annual pledge drive, not annual. We are in a pledge drive of we need to make up for some lost funding from the feds. Mm-hmm. And we're asking you to step up and help us. And someone has.
Yeah, we got a online pledge, KAXE.org. And we heard from Scott and Betty from Baxter. They said, this is not much, but every bit helps. It is much, Scott and Betty. Thank you so much for helping us out. We are trying to get through this crisis that is presented us. That's why we are coming to you again. We know we were here last week, but we rely on your generosity. And we believe we're determined that we will get through this crisis with people like Scott and Betty from Baxter, from Rob and Jody from Duluth, from Jack from Cass Lake, from Booka and Edith from the Grand Rapids area. Already off to a great start. Now we need you. Text the word donate, 218-326-1234, or call that number. You get a chance to talk to Janet.
Yeah, Janet is a truly interesting person. Came to Northern Minnesota, I won't say because of the radio station, but it certainly was a strong attraction for her and her husband, Don.
What was so fun was in the time that they were looking to move here, it was always Don and Janet on the move. So like the whole Green Cheese community knew they were looking and they were moving, and it took a while to go back and forth. And it became, that's what it's like to listen to Green Cheese. It becomes a thing you're part of. You are invited to be a part of it. So is Phenology. That's what it's like. And we need you to keep it going today. We have a goal of 25 pledges during the Tuesday morning show. We only have 21 to go now, and we're looking for your pledge of support. Text 218-326-1234.
You know, it occurs to me that someday we ought to open the mic and or open the phone lines and have an on-air Phenology program, because we could have people calling in with their plants and animals, and it would be kind of fun.
Yes, I'd be
well,
up for that.
Let's put that on our list of things that we might want to check out. Back to the flowers that are blooming. I talked about Joe Pieweed. Pretty hard to miss the black-eyed Susans. They make me laugh. They're so happy. They're these big yellow flowers with that dark brown center. My friend Dallas says he calls them brown-eyed Susans. He says no Susan should ever have a black eye. And I have to agree with him, but they are a lovely flower right now and pretty much ubiquitous. Big splashes of them along the edges of the roads. Of course, the lower and brighter yellow flower with no dark brown center is bird's foot trefoil, and that is blooming in profusion right along the edges of the roads as well. There's a nice little flower that forms almost a perfect cone. It comes to a nice point. It's round at the base. I'm trying to remember the formula for figuring out the area of a cone. 1/3 pi r squared times height or something like that. But at any rate, they are a perfect little cone of white flowers, and they're blooming right now. They are you're going to be driving along, and you're not going to see the plant that much. It has a kind of a woody stem and an interesting growth habit, but what you're going to notice are these cone-shaped white flowers, clusters, probably 50 or 60 flowers. And if you have the time, stop and go over and look at those flowers, because individually those flowers are gorgeous. They're tiny, they're white, they have this beautiful pink center. They're just, it's worth the trip. Trust me, you'll like them. And if you don't, well, move on. There are other flowers out there too. Along my drive into my house, the white sweet clover is dominating, was probably at its peak a week ago. It's still doing just fine. This white sweet clover is not at all like the clover you're thinking of. You're thinking probably of the white Dutchman's clover, which is that little low white kind of clover-like flower. That is a series of tiny white flowers in a cluster. But the white sweet clover is 3, 4, 5 feet tall. It has these long arching branches, and the branches are covered in tiny white flowers. And there's a cousin called the yellow sweet clover, which is just almost exactly like the white one, except that it's yellow. And they are blooming in profusion right now. I was out for a swim yesterday. I happened to throw my towel right down next to a white sweet clover shrub. I'm going to call it a shrub. It's an annual, a forb, and it is, they can get quite large. This one was about 3 feet high and about 3 feet across, and there had to be 50 bees on it. It was just humming with bees, and it brings up a point You may recall, some of you who have been listening for a long time or through the summer and back into spring may recall that we were concerned for a while that there weren't very many bees around. And this was during a time when flowers are being pollinated by these same insects. Well, the Juneberries came through really strongly. We had a great crop of Juneberries. They are pretty much gone now. The white-throated sparrows, cedar waxwings, and robins have eaten them all. The pincherries are unusually loaded with fruit this year. My pincherries are still draped in these big descending columns of red berries, but every day the robins are in there and they're helping themselves. And along with the robins, the cedar waxwings and the white-throated sparrows, everybody likes a little bit of pincherry right now. Choke cherries are just starting to get ripe. They were green a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. They began to show a little blush about a week ago, and now they are red, trending to purple. And for some people, the choke cherry is a very popular fruit. It's easy to pick. They're not very tall. The pin cherries in my yard are, you know, some of those berries are 25 feet off the ground, and there's no way I'm going to get them. So they're good food for the birds. Choke cherries, the bushes don't get quite that tall, and the berries, oftentimes the weight of the berries will pull the bushes down, so they're easy to pick. But choke cherries are going to be ripe very soon. I read a piece yesterday or the day before about a student out west who ran some research on choke cherry. The family or the tribe made choke cherry pudding, and they would include the seeds. And she ran tests using just choke cherries without the seeds and choke cherries with the seeds, and found that for a certain type of cancer cell, this was absolutely not a cure, but certainly it repressed the growth of cancer cells. So choke cherry pudding, it might be something you want to check out and see if you can't find a recipe and gain some better health through eating some of the natural foods. Among the other, so that was a little detour off of white sweet clover. Jewelweed or spotted touch-me-not has begun to bloom. Bright orange flowers, trumpet-shaped, beautiful little plant. Flowers have an amazing habit of, they start off male, then they switch to female, and then they have these seed pods that explode when you touch them. So jewelweed is a pretty interesting plant. Because it's an annual, the plant actually produces a closed flower, a flower that is a replica of the genetics of the plant. They're covering their bets. If they can't get cross-pollinated, they're going to have a reproduction of themselves in the form of a seed through a closed flower, clistogamous flower, that will reproduce that plant in the next year. Ghost pipe, this little white flower that grows always in the presence of rotting wood. It is a saprophyte. It lives off of the energy of the wood. It has no chlorophyll. It's going to be pure white. If you pick one and look, you'll see the flower head inside might be a little bit pink. Sometimes these things can be pink or red. I have seen both, but most often they are white, pure white, and that flower has just begun to bloom thanks to Ann Gapinski and Mark Gwilliam for pointing that out to me. Blazing Star blooming in the areas where it blooms. If you're out west in the Bemidji area or a little bit south of there, you probably have Blazing Star in the fields. I used to see it around here, but not very often. There's a wild mint that is blooming right now. Pink flowers growing in the axils, that is the joints. So look at the stalk of this flower. It's going to be 10, 12, 14 inches tall. where it branches out, where the leaves come off the axil, there will be a cluster of tiny pink flowers. And that's wild mint, and that is blooming right now. The white oaks and the red oaks are putting out a bumper crop of acorns this year. So coupled with all of the bumper crops of choke cherries, pin cherries, and June berries, it's going to be a good year for the berry eaters. The hazel brush, the hazelnuts are getting riper and riper. It'll be a week to 10 days. It's usually sometime in the first week of August that everybody shows up and eats those guys down. I'm starting to see a few morning cloak butterflies and some Compton's tortoiseshell butterflies. These are the ones, there's a generation that overwinters and comes out in the spring, lays their eggs. Those caterpillars then go through their process and develop, and they are hatching out now. These morning cloaks and Compton's tortoiseshells may estivate, which is sort of like a summertime hibernation. They may disappear for a while, and then just before fall, they will emerge, and they will start searching out places where they can overwinter. So watch for morning cloaks, big monarch-sized, almost black butterflies. Compton's tortoiseshell is a little smaller, maybe a quarter inch smaller, and it's going to be the pattern you're going to see is sort of orange and black and brown on its wings. Oftentimes children mistake them for the monarchs. And speaking of monarchs, the group that has come out of the eggs that were laid by the group that came in from migration are hatching, and I am seeing monarchs every day and sometimes several during each day. So there looks like a pretty good recovery among the monarchs. My friend Dallas says that some of these will be in the group that migrate. I thought that these would probably have another generation that would then migrate, but keep an eye out for monarchs. They are they're trying to recover, and it's a struggle. Finally, I think that the hummingbirds have fledged. There are a couple of little ones that are showing up at my feeders that are, they look not like the adults. They look a little smaller. Their tails are a little shorter. So I'm thinking that the hummers have fledged. And I'm seeing American kestrels along Blue Heron Drive where I live. And the kestrels are a falcon, and they're the smallest falcon. They're really quite interesting. The females are kind of reddish brown on the back and the wing, and the males are bluish gray on the wings and have a reddish brown back, and both have really distinctive white and black markings on their heads. I've taken up a good share of your morning this morning talking about phenology. It is my passion, obviously. I hope that you enjoy phenology, and I hope that you will call or text and pledge your support to KAXE. We need your help. It is a dire time for KAXE and for all public radio, public broadcasting in general, and we are asking you to step up and support the local radio that you have come to depend on.